Hello everyone, my name is Professor Anuj and I'll be taking you through Information Technology at Genesis. So this particular program includes IT, technologies that we see in day-to-day life, what are the futuristic trends, and then more importantly from a responsibility perspective, how does compliance play a role in this? Quite often you would have seen IT getting implemented, but a lot of issues with regards to privacy, data security, breach of personal information, etc., keep doing rounds. So we will look at the advantages that IT brings to the table, but from a lens of compliance. With this, we look at this particular chapter, but more importantly about me. So my name is Anuj, as I mentioned. I work in a IT organization. I drive cloud computing and artificial intelligence across enterprise customers. I have close to 18 years of experience in this particular domain. Earlier, I used to handle data center business, and now with the movement towards cloud, I kind of drive this particular business. So with this introduction, let's start going. I hope this particular journey is exciting to you. I am super excited to take you through this particular engagement, and we'll together explore what technology has in store for us, what are the different aspects when it comes to handling this particular piece of information technology, and more importantly, we look at the different compliances that it brings to the table. So in today's class, we will look at the advent of technology, how it all started. I mean, it's important to understand this. And then we look at some of the aspects about information technology, how it is beneficial to us, what are the different aspects that help to gain competitive advantage in the market, be it cost advantages, be it advantages with regards to speed to market, speed to deliver the product, agility to make changes in the rapidly changing environment, and so on. And we also look at some of the issues and challenges when it comes to adopting the new technologies. As I mentioned, some of them could be things like security, data breach, personal identifiable information available on the internet, etc., etc. But we look at all of these combined together and then make a evaluated judgment as to how these finer aspects of IT can be plugged in so that we get the best advantages of IT. Yeah. So we all understand that information is important for any kind of business, be it say the banking industry where you do a banking transaction, to the payment gateways, the payment wallets, or any kind of e-commerce transaction. So information is vital for any kind of business, and it's more important and relevant in today's world as compared to say 10 years back or 15 years back, where we didn't have things like social messaging so prominent, or things like internet not so prominent. But it's absolutely crucial for doing business. New age companies or startups, they kind of do business on the internet. So you would see so many satellite offices, even companies that don't have physical offices, but then they do great amount of business. Say a case in time, like say a company like Amazon, right? Now you would see it gets engaged in buyer-seller relationship. But then if you look at what is the asset size or what is the land bank, I mean, the company would not have much, correct? Apart from a corporate office. But that's the beauty. I mean, that's the power of technology, that with the advent of internet and the connectivity and the reach, buyers and sellers can connect over a common platform. So we look at how this particular role has been in the past three decades. And as I said, everything started with the advent of internet, right? So it started in the 1960s, where the entire advancement happened in communication, and which made communication very seamless. In those times, there were certain predictions made that, you know, computing power or IT power might be sufficient, but clearly those predictions fell flat and those were proved wrong, because the kind of reach, the kind of compute power and the kind of advancements that have been made in this particular field is absolutely enormous. The internet kind of paved the way for modern connectivity. We now have 5G connectivity. People are talking at 6G. People are talking at other advanced ways in which communication happens, and how we interact with one another. Now, you would have heard terms like Internet of Things, right? Now, and I'm sure everyone kind of knows the wearables market, right? So say, for example, I'm wearing a smartwatch here. Now, what does this particular watch do? It transmits data over, say, a Bluetooth or or something called as a narrow band frequency range in IoT spectrum. And then this particular watch gets connected to a centralized platform which is hosted somewhere on the internet, right? So the case in point being, with Internet of Things, which is nothing but a connection of a different devices, sensors connected to each devices that send data every minute, every second to a centralized platform somewhere placed on the internet. And then you get all kinds of flashy reports, analysis about how things are. Now, we look at a particular case of a smartwatch, right? But look at a broader case where you have these kind of devices in all smart electric meters. It becomes so easy for a power transmission company to know the electric needs of consumers and then forecast the demand so that there is no shortage of electricity. You look at this particular source or of information in manufacturing industry. Imagine a shop floor where you have multiple different sensors providing data in real time so as to take real time decisions. So the advantage of internet in all of these is absolutely humongous. As I said, the internet has revolutionized communication. And more importantly, if we look at the modern ways, right, things like social, I'm sure everyone would have had a account in Facebook or Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, right? So social is everywhere. People do businesses on social platforms. There are certain businesses that sell over WhatsApp, right? And with the advent of cloud, things have become absolutely seamless. If we talk about artificial intelligence and the field of machine learning, which is my favorite topic, the use cases are humongous. Right from we spoke about, say, energy forecasting for a power company, to things like, say, predicting the rainfall, or doing weather analysis, or maybe take a case in time of an insurer where you are paying certain premium for, say, accidental insurance, and the insurance company calculates the profitability out of that particular transaction. I mean, the use cases are humongous, right? From, say, credit card transactions, identifying a fraudulent transaction on the fly, that is in real time, whether you are using the right amount of credit card, are you authorized to do it? So the use cases using artificial intelligence and machine learning on cloud are absolutely fabulous for a revolution like this. Mobile devices and wireless communication have been omnipresent. Everyone uses a mobile phone, and literally it becomes so simple to do transaction, be it a banking transaction or doing a UPI transaction through your mobile phone. It's absolutely seamless. And with the technologies like, say, 3D printing. Now, 3D printing was something which we thought that you know, it's a far-fetched technology, it couldn't happen. But we've seen so many companies engage in 3D printing. We are seeing houses being made through 3D printers. Now, what better use of 3D printers than people getting a house that is built within a couple of days? And these are pretty programmable interfaces. So house with all the different materials and a drawing which is fed into a 3D printer can easily come up with a actual house which is livable. So it's not something which is far-fetched, it's not something which is written only in the textbooks, but it's actually happening. You look at things like, say, driverless cars. Now, driverless cars might not be a real thing in India right now, but you see the kind of R&D that is going on in this particular field. Very soon, you would see driverless cars as a distinct reality. And as I said, this particular innovation in technology and enhancement is driving the new age of digitization. And India is at the helm of things. Importance of staying informed in today's world comes with a lot of responsibility. So as I mentioned, while you have your mobile phones doing internet banking, there also is a reason to be cautious when it comes to security, cautious when it comes to revealing your identity over the internet, and so on. So what exactly is information technology and why is it important? So information technology is usually defined as the development, design, study, implementation and management of computer related information. Now, simple, everyone understands what is information technology. In simple terms, it's basically a hardware and some piece of software which gives you a desired result. It could be a healthcare application giving you results such as real-time heart monitoring, or it could be things like, say, HRMS application, that is a human resource management application, or a payroll application giving you payroll information or monthly salary information. And this particular information technology is used for storing, protecting, processing, securing, transmitting, and receiving information. So what exactly is information technology? It's a combination of hardware and software, which gives you the desired results in the form of protecting information, transmitting information, and retrieving and making use of this particular information. It is also important to know that the pace at which IT is changing implies that a decade from now, lifestyles will be a lot different from what we face today. Driverless cars being a case in time, we would have never thought that transacting on the internet through a UPI based payment platform could be a reality in India, with ticket size being as low as a single digit figure, right? So today, if we have to transact, say, with a local grocery shop, value up to a single digit rupee, it's still possible. So no one would have thought, maybe till say 10 years back, that UPI and the boom that it has got into the payment gateway system was a real thing. But it has happened. And there are several business functions that enables such a critical design thinking to happen. And IT is at the central of everything. So information technology, it facilitates the decentralization of operations. So earlier, where everything was centralized, so an example would be a bank which was, say, operating 10 years back, where everything was centralized. So suppose if you had a bank account in one particular branch, so to withdraw money, to deposit money, or to do any kind of transaction, you had to visit that particular branch only. And look at how things operate now. So everything is decentralized. You go to any particular branch, there is thing like core banking that is implemented, right? So you are easily able to transact without any hassle. So it facilitates decentralization of operations in that particular manner. Another important use case when it comes to IT is telecommuting, reducing office space, overheads. As I said, multiple people now have started working from home. Multiple companies, enterprises have now started adopting the new way of working, which is hybrid in nature. So you might, a particular enterprise might ask its employees to come to office maybe twice a week or thrice a week and do their job remotely for the rest of the week. Now, this is important because even from the organization perspective, they would save a lot of money in terms of, say, the overall space, the air conditioning cost, etc., etc. And at the same time, giving flexibility to employees to work remotely. Now, as I said, this gives dual side benefits. The organization has gets benefited by the operational costs, so the lower operational costs. And at the same time, the employees feel happy not to come to office every day. And how is this possible? This is possible through internet, through information technology, through new age tools. I mean, there are several collaborative platforms like, say, Microsoft Teams, Zoom meetings, Google Meet, etc., etc., which makes this possible. Now, email becomes the primary source of information or the data transfer mechanism, reducing the need for paper. Now, apart from a banking transaction, everything happens over the email, be it so you don't require a paper trail as such, but then this has given rise to an email trail, right? So we are moving away from the physical to the virtual. There are multiple, as I said, multiple collaboration tools which foster better working relationship with employees. Now, things like SharePoint portals. Now, it becomes important when you work in cross-functional teams where you have a centralized platform for information sharing, which could be easily accessible by employees across the world. So we no longer restrict employees to come to office, spend time in physical meeting rooms, exchange thoughts and information. What has happened is you have virtual meeting rooms in place of physical meeting rooms. People come, people log in through remote sites in their virtual meeting rooms, exchange ideas. You could record those meetings and also have many tools such as annotation, whiteboards, Q&A, you could do polls, etc., etc., through these tools. In fact, if a company CEO wants to address the employees, it is very much possible through tools like, say, WebEx or Zoom meetings or Microsoft Teams. So earlier, there was a tool called Skype, which was very popular. Now, what has happened is after 2020, when COVID hit us, everyone wanted to have these tools. And you would see companies like Zoom meetings and Microsoft Teams having a meteoric rise during those times. And now this has become the new normal. You don't see people coming to physical offices and spending time with one another. People generally prefer to have a call set up and then discuss. Technical evolution in communication has revolutionized the business operations. So as I mentioned, people now across the globe, you can have the business operations spanned throughout. Now see the kind of benefit that it has done. A small vendor, and I'm just making this up, right? A small vendor who is specialized at doing things, maybe a bangle seller out of Jaipur, he can sell the goods in say Europe, right? Now how good is that? Specifically to industries like banking, insurance, IT is no longer a support function. It's at the center of business operations. Now whenever say new ideas, new thoughts are built in, IT is at the center of everything. To see how the productivity increases, to see how the revenue from the business line increases, it requires information technology and the supporting businesses to contribute to the revenue share. Data tracking has become essential for businesses to understand the consumer behavior, and that's where the entire field of AI and machine learning comes into picture. You see the customer trends, you see the demand, and then do a demand forecasting basis the actual consumption. And that's what every company is currently doing. So be it an inventory management system used by companies like Flipkart, Amazon, or any of the e-commerce companies, to say companies in the FMCG space, or say companies like the paint manufacturers, say a company like Asian Paint, who uses artificial intelligence to the core, right? And more importantly, platforms like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn are all integrated to provide the better use and the better leverage of business to their end customers. So the landscape of business operations has undergone a significant transformation, as we discussed with some of the examples. Enabling products and services to be accessible worldwide without breaking the barriers of physical need. We can speak about advantages like virtualization, and we'll talk about virtualization in a bit. Where I'll talk about some of the details around virtualization. Globalization, enhanced communication, cost effectiveness, and the emergence of new opportunities that highlight the impact of technology on the modern practices. And as we discussed, IT serves as the backbone of organization. So it's no longer treated as a support function, but it's at the front line, contributing to the revenue parameters for every business. So now we look at virtualization as a technology, how it helps in the overall IT landscape, what virtualization and which are the different forms of virtualization, and its overall impact. So virtualization, as a definition, it refers to creating virtual versions of the hardware, operating system, storage devices, and network resources. Now, what does it mean in simple language? So in earlier days, imagine that you have a hardware. So just imagine that you have a particular server, right? Now, one particular server means you have one physical appliance on which there is an operating system that is loaded, and then there is an application that is loaded on that particular server. So think of it as maybe a high-end laptop that has a very high CPU, as in a very high Intel processor, and a very high memory, right? And on top of it, you have say a bandwidth hungry application that has been deployed. Now, what has happened is with virtualization, what you could do is on top of this one particular server, you could create multiple small servers. So on one physical machine or on one physical laptop, you could have, say, 5 or 10 different smaller laptops running on the same physical machine. So that is what virtualization did. So if I talk about server virtualization, there is something called as virtual machines. So virtual machines is nothing but a server, a small virtual server which runs on the same underlying physical host. So that is hardware virtualization. So hardware virtualization, it says creating virtual machines with separate software execution from the underlying hardware. So although the underlying hardware would be the same, every virtual machine would have its own operating system and network resources allocated to itself. And the beauty about that is, suppose if earlier your one particular server used to host only one application, in the case of virtualization, you could have multiple different virtual machines running different operating systems, and every virtual machine could have a new software application running on top of it, right? So how cool is that? So assuming that earlier you had one server running, say, a Tally application, one server running HRMS application, one server running payroll application, and another server storing, say, a CRM software, right? Now, what could happen with virtualization is you would have one physical server, but you have smaller virtual machines each doing their individual tasks, right? So this cuts down the cost tremendously. The power to manage reduces drastically, and plus it gives you economies of scale, right? Now we also look at, there is a new term called as desktop virtualization. Now what happens in desktop virtualization is, we are all familiar with our desktop machines, right? So you have a monitor, keyboard, and a CPU, right? Now, in the case of desktop virtualization, what happens is all the compute resources, that is the CPU, becomes a central unit. So I don't know if you would have seen certain banks, typically say like a ICICI bank, if you go visit their front office, you would see that the person who is assisting you with the transactions, they would have a screen or a terminal or a monitor, and there'll be a small device the size of maybe a mobile phone that is there for compute, right? So that is the end device, which is the CPU. So that is desktop virtualization. What they're doing is, this particular small device the size of the mobile phone is just as a transit device, but the entire compute happens at a central location. So that is desktop virtualization. So what happens is, separating logical desktops from physical machines, enabling access from anywhere. So tomorrow, if one particular person is unavailable and he logs in from somewhere else, the person could get the same operating system, the same desktop, the look and feel, everything same, because it comes centrally from one particular source, rather than storing everything locally. Now, what advantages it has? You could take backups centrally. You could recover data centrally. It is no longer tied to one particular machine. So suppose if the machine crashes, the hard disk crashes, the operating system crashes, it doesn't impact the data nor the transactions. I mean, you could quickly spin up the same operations in another terminal. So these are basically dumb terminals, because the intelligence lies centrally in the central processing units. So what happened, or what are the benefits of virtualization? So centralized administrative tasks, as I mentioned, improved scalability. So you could spin up the virtual machines in case of server virtualization very quickly, as compared to procuring a physical server, going through the tedious cycle of procurement, negotiation, getting the hardware specifications, etc. And then resource utilization. Maybe understanding resource utilization takes a different lecture altogether. But what happened in the case of server virtualization, was when we had one physical server, most of the times it was noticed that the server doesn't get fully utilized. So if you would look at the CPU utilization patterns of that particular server, it would be in the range of say 10%, 20%, not more. So what we are doing is then there is a huge unutilized space. So that's what server virtualization did. On the same physical host, where you had multiple different virtual machines, you ensured that the utilization of that physical machine is higher so as to have multiple virtual machines, right? So that's the use case for resource utilization. Now we come to another important term, that is software virtualization. Now, just like you have the hardware virtualization, where you have multiple virtual machines running on one physical machine. Similarly, you have software virtualization. That means the application here is virtualized. So it means that the application management and the distribution of the intelligence that the software carries is abstracted, right? Now you have two types of software virtualization. One is the operating system virtualization. So again, a similar example that I spoke. So hosting multiple virtual environments on the single OS instance. So think of it this way. So earlier you had the same physical machine, and on physical machine you had multiple virtual machines, right? Now in case of this particular software virtualization, it's rather called as containerization. What happens is you have the same operating system and you have multiple instances of virtual machines. So the same OS, but multiple different virtual machines running on the same OS, same operating system. Application and workspace virtualization. So hosting individual applications separately from the OS. So OS is separate from the application. And what you could do is you could create workspaces within the particular server to support the individual applications. The third important thing here is service virtualization. Now, ensuring that the service deliverables of the particular utilities are delivered without affecting the higher or the entire scheme of things is service virtualization. Now, I will give you a good example here. So there is something known as microservices architecture. Now, what does this mean is that when a software is run, it gets broken down into smaller or multiple different services. So think of it this way. When you open the task manager on your laptop, you see multiple different services running, right? Now, the microservices architecture is designed in such a way that even if one of the services fails, it doesn't impact the rest of the services. So that is service virtualization. You could break one particular service into multiple small different services so as to have a isolation between the service and also ensure at the same time that the utilization of the underlying resources happen. So that is service virtualization. Similarly, there is a concept called memory utilization. Now, we looked at CPU or the processors in a virtual machine that could be utilized. So just like a virtual machine has virtual CPUs, it also has virtual memory. So assuming that say a server has 1 TB of memory, that particular memory could be broken down into smaller chunks of virtual memory. And that gets utilized in a virtual machine. Now, I know this could be a little difficult to understand, but again, think of it this way. The same physical machine, and on top of the physical machine, you have these small, tiny virtual machines. Each virtual machine would have its own CPU, own memory, own operating system, and own network resources, which is called as a VNIC or a virtual network interface card. So that is a virtual machine having all the things. virtual CPUs, virtual memory, virtual operating system, and virtual network. So that's everything that is required in a physical server that comes in a virtual server. So this is memory virtualization. Similarly, there will be a concept called storage virtualization, right? So storage virtualization, what happens is in storage virtualization is the storage, which is a physical form of storage, it gets broken down into smaller forms of virtual storage.